Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And with 4 days before the election, we will check in now with journalist John Heilman, co-author of the meticulously reported book Game Change, which was a bestseller about President Obama's 2008 campaign. And from John Stewart's rally to restore sanity to Bill Clinton reportedly trying to get the Democrat to drop out of Florida's three-way Senate race at the last minute, here we are at that final weekend of a national campaign where anything crazy can happen. And John's cover story in New York Magazine this week discusses how Mayor Bloomberg might enable Sarah Palin to become president in 2012. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Great to be with you, as always.
I'll bite on your article. How might Mayor Bloomberg enable Sarah Palin to become president?
Well, you know, it's a sort of a three-carom bank shot, Brian, and I was trying with the piece to a lot of people assume that if Sarah Palin were the Republican nominee, she would never end up in the White House because she is, you know, unelectable. And she has obviously very low approval ratings nationally right now, down about 22%. But it seemed like there was at least one scenario that I could imagine where that could happen. And the thing takes you through three steps. One is she running for president? I think that increasingly looks clear, especially after her interview on Entertainment Tonight last night, where she said basically she was seriously considering running. Second is, could she be the Republican nominee? And in that case, you know, I lay out, talking to Republican strategists throughout the party, the notion that she is in some ways the front runner in one of two brackets in the Republican nomination fight, right? The anti-establishment Tea Party bracket. She will be, if she runs, the clear favorite to win that bracket, and then she'll be one of the finalists who goes up against whoever emerges from the establishment bracket, someone like Mitt Romney or Tim Pawlenty for the governor of Minnesota. If she's one-on-one, and if she especially does well in the early states, states where there's a strong Tea Party and cultural conservative component like Iowa, South Carolina, Nevada, she might have a head of steam that would make her the nominee. Then the question becomes, is there a way for her to beat Barack Obama? And I think unless the economy's in the toilet, it's very difficult for her in a one-on-one race against Obama to win. But many strategists think that that if she were the nominee, that a serious third party or independent bid would come in. And my reporting says that Mayor Bloomberg is looking once again, as he did in 2008, pretty seriously at running. If that happened, there's a reasonable chance, not a huge chance, but some chance that Mayor Bloomberg could win a handful of big states, taking away enough votes from Barack Obama in places like New York, California, New Jersey, Florida, to keep him from getting 270 electoral votes. And then, as you know, if no one has 270 electoral votes, the election is thrown to the House of Representatives, and if the Republicans control the House, say hello to President Palin.
Wow. So you report that President Obama has been cozying up to Mayor Bloomberg to try and prevent this. How so?
Well, the White House is very concerned about a third-party candidate. No White House is ever happy about the idea of things that upset the electoral map in the way that a candidate, especially one who might throw a couple billion dollars into the race. And so, you know, we've seen everybody who's listened to your show is familiar with the published reports about the White House floating his name as a potential Treasury Secretary. You know, the president invited him up to Martha's Vineyard over the summer to play golf. He's dispatched Joe Biden and Tim Geithner up to New York to have breakfast with the mayor and seek his counsel on economic matters. They're trying as best they can to keep the mayor sweet, and a lot of people inside the mayor's orbit see that as an attempt to try to keep him on the sidelines in 2012.
In Game Change, you tell the story of how the Obama campaign outran the mighty Hillary Clinton team and then the kind of lame John McCain team. How would you compare in style or approach the president's campaigning this fall in support of Democrats for Congress?
You know, it's funny. The circumstances have changed so much because Obama's brand has changed so much, and he's lost so much altitude with so many of the key constituencies that he was so strong with back in 2008. You know, independent voters who have, I mean, decisively, I think we're going to see on November 2nd on Election Day next week, independent voters have turned pretty dramatically against the president in a lot of key states. There's not a lot of enthusiasm in the Democratic base. We're going to see, I think, every reasonable projection shows that there's going to be a huge drop-off in African-American turnout, in Latino turnout, and in new voter turnout and young voter turnout. So the circumstances have changed so much. I mean, the president can still go around the country and get big crowds who are very enthusiastic to see him. So in that sense, it resembles 2008. But boy, the circumstances have really just changed so much for him in terms of his electoral appeal. It's hard to see him really moving the needle very much almost anywhere.
Have you reported on the John Stewart rally at all? It seems like it'll be comedy meets a plea for civility on the stage, but progressive activism in the crowd. What do you make of this event in the context of the upcoming election?
You know, I'm not convinced that. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are going to go, and certainly Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have huge followings in a certain demographic, and I love those guys and think they're really funny. And there'll be a big crowd in the mall. It's also true, as you just said, that they are trying to be, because they're protecting their brands, they're trying to not become too overtly political. They want to retain their status as comedians and parodists and satirists and not be too implicated in the political process. At the same time, it kind of gets outside your control when you do an event like this because, as you just said, in the crowd, every possible kind of partisan, and not every kind of possible, there are some, I suppose, some far, far right-wing partisans who will not be in attendance there, but almost everybody else is going to be there trying to somehow hitch their wagon to the back of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert because their branding, the Rally for Sanity, is so attractive to almost every political constituency. So you're going to see a lot of Democrats out there trying to associate themselves with this. I can't imagine that when all is said and done, it's going to make any difference to the outcome of the elections on Tuesday whatsoever.
Well, let's drill down a little bit deeper on that, though, because Glenn Beck claimed that it was a coincidence that his right-wing politics rally was held on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. I don't think Stewart and Colbert are claiming it's a coincidence that this rally is on the weekend before the election. So could it help serve as a get-out-the-vote tool, even if those words are never spoken from the stage?
Could it, Brian? You know, I suppose it's possible, but I think there are, you know, I mean, it'll be really interesting to know. I mean, we have no historical precedent for this, so it's hard to make a really rational argument about, well, in the past when such a thing has happened, it has led to X. You know, I imagine that there are a ton of people who are going to get on those buses and are going to come to Washington, D.C., who are really attracted by the idea of the pop culture spectacle of seeing these heroes of theirs, Stewart and Colbert, on stage, and who think that the political process is ridiculous and has become increasingly ridiculous, and who are going there in some way to register a protest against the insanity and the polarization of the political process. But that is not going to impel them 3 days later to actually put on their shoes on maybe an unpleasant day or maybe a pleasant day and go to the polling places. Most people, I think, who are pretty motivated to vote on Tuesday are going to vote, and those who aren't motivated to vote, going to see Jon Stewart on a nice Saturday afternoon in Washington isn't going to change their mind.
Going back to the premise of your article, I wonder if a big turnout here and an expression of disgust with polarization might actually enable somebody like Bloomberg to think he should run for president. You know, the original title of this rally before Stewart changed it was the Million Moderates March.
Yeah.
And if there is this sense of playing both sides against the middle, you know, maybe Bloomberg is going to come out of this thinking, God, even Jon Stewart fans might want me.
Look, I actually think there's something to that. And I think in the sense that that this is one of a lot of different expressions that we're seeing in the political culture and the broader culture, that people are sick to death of the crazy polarization and partisan bickering and the nastiness of the political culture and the insanity of it that we've seen over the last two decades, frankly, but it's only gotten worse with each successive administration. And there is out there, the country is not, in fact, as polarized as our politics are. And there are people who would like an alternative. There's no question about that. Is that enough? Is there enough of them to elect a third-party candidate? I don't know. But there are going to be, especially if President Obama, relatively far-right candidate gets the Republican nomination in 2012, and if President Obama is not buoyed by an improving economy, if his situation, his standing deteriorates further, he's, you know, in the mid-40s right now, which is actually not that bad compared to people like Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan historically, but if his situation deteriorates further, and especially, I'll add another one, especially if the president decides to govern to run a relatively oppositionalist partisan strategy in 2011, 2012, there are going to be a lot of moderates, a lot of people like Mike Bloomberg, and maybe more than one of them with a lot of money, who are going to see an opening in the middle that might be encouraged by a rally like this for sure.
Interesting. We have a minute left. If Democrats are now trying to rally each other to turn out to vote, to support the Obama agenda, as people are saying, what is the Obama agenda of the next 2 years? Is there a known list of priorities?
Well, boy, everything that the White House is saying right now, Brian, is that the president is going to try, and the president has said this himself, he's going to try to figure out a way to live in a world where there are more Republicans in Congress and potentially, or I would say likely, Republican control, at least of the House, if not the Senate. And he's got a list of things that he thinks they might be able to cooperate on. The deficit and the budget is one of the biggest. They say education is another one. They say trade is conceivably another one. But it's a list of things that are really big, and those are all big. Those are big, important issues in American life, but they are not issues that tend to animate and rally the traditional Democratic base vote. Those are issues of grave national importance, but they're not very exciting to the left.
John Heilman, writing for New York Magazine, has the cover story this week on how Mayor Bloomberg could inadvertently enable Sarah Palin to be elected president in 2012. He's also the co-author of the bestseller about the 2008 Obama campaign called Game Change. John, as always, thanks a lot.
Brian, thank you.
And we're counting down to Election Day around here. You can sign up now to report back to us about your experience in the voting booth. I'll be anchoring our election return show on Tuesday night. But right now, you can text the word DECIDE to 69866. And we will text you back on Tuesday. And if you don't know where to vote, we will tell you where to vote. Sign up by sending DECIDE to 69866. Then we'll be asking for your feedback via that method on Tuesday. Text DECIDE to 69866. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.